The issue of water scarcity is on the minds of many, long taken for granted. Water availability has entered the realm of economics, politics, and people's food and lifestyle choices. But as anxiety mounts, many are finding new routes to water security with key implications for food access, economic resilience, biodiversity, and climate change. In the new book, Water in Plain Sight, Hope for a Thirsty World, journalist Judith Schwartz shows that there are alternatives to praying for rain or sandbagging, demonstrating that we can ally with the water cycle to revive the earth and restore lush, productive landscapes. Judith Schwartz is a journalist whose recent work looks at ecological restoration as a way to address environmental, economic, and social challenges. Again, the title of the new book is Water in Plain Sight, Hope for a Thirsty World, and we welcome Judith Schwartz to the roundtable this morning. Judith, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
What brought you to the subject of water scarcity?
Well, partly it's that I think that water may not be as scarce as we all think. Okay, so here's how it went. A few years back, I wrote a book about soil. Actually, I was on the roundtable. It's called Cows Save the Planet
That's
and
right.
Other Improbable Ways of Restoring Soil to Heal the Earth. And there was a chapter there about water, and that material really stuck with me and kind of blew me away, because what it brought home was the notion of, here it is, how water is connected to everything, how water is connected to land, and in that way we can't really talk about water without talking about land. And that's where my challenging the notion of water scarcity comes from, in that if we took better care of the land, if we restored soil in places where this would make a, there are many places it would make a big difference, but if we focused our attention to healthy soil, then lo and behold, more water would be held in the ground.
Where do you think perhaps that the conventional wisdom has it wrong when it comes to the concern over the amount of water we have access to?
Well, I think like many of our challenges that we have today, much comes from the fact that so many of us, myself included, and so many of our decision makers live lives detached from natural processes. So water comes out of a tap. Water comes down, and it does, and water comes down from the sky. And because when water comes down from the sky, when it rains, when it snows, that replenishes our water sources, we think that's the only water that matters. But the truth is that actually, when we do get precipitation, most of that water actually goes into the soil. It falls on the land, and when that land is in good health, you've got healthy living soil covered with plants. The water remains there. It stays in the system. It replenishes the underground water stores. It's available to plants. All of that. Then the water cycle's working. But when water falls on concrete, it just rushes away, often carrying along with it pollutants, or it falls on desertified, compacted soils, bare ground. Then that water is not there for us to use.
So you're basically looking at alternatives. Instead of us just praying for rain and hoping that it comes down, that there are other ways to capture the water, and as the title indicates, water that is in plain sight.
Absolutely. So in the book, I strive to show how water intersects with climate, biodiversity, desertification, food security or insecurity, peace and conflict, and how understanding those connections allows us to better address our problems. And one big one there is climate. And in researching the other book, the book about soil, I was alerted to something that to me seems really important. Okay, so when we make the connection between water and climate, usually it goes in one direction. So it's the understanding that as with climate change, as the, you know, with warming, this is going to put a stress on water sources around the world. And indeed, this is true and very concerning. However, we don't look at the other part of that, which is the effect that water has on climate. And once we open our minds to that, the possibilities are extraordinary, because water is the dominant driver of climate. You know, we forget about that when we concentrate on CO2. CO2 is important too, but it's water processes that are driving, that drive the weather, hydrological processes like transpiration, condensation, evaporation. We don't think about all the moisture that is moving through the atmosphere continually, and that there are ways that we can, namely through restoring ecosystems, bring that movement back into balance to create, well, cooler conditions and conditions more conducive to, you know, healthy growth of plants.
All right, so let's talk about some of those conditions. Let's talk about some of the things that are in our plain sight that we can look at and where we can find this water and what we need to do to harness it.
Okay, so one trip that I took for this book, I got to do a little bit of traveling, which is nice. I went to Southern Africa and Mexico, and I also, in the middle of the summer, found myself in far west Texas, where it's very hot and very dry. And everyone I met down there was complaining about how the water table is sinking. However, the people that I stayed with, a couple named Catherine and Marcus Otmers, they had no water problems. And the reason is this, that despite the dryness and the heat, they were collecting water from condensation. They had devised the roof so that there was airflow, and it would the heat differential when the sun hit the upper metal roof, and then as the day wore on and the evening came and there would be cool breezes, the differential created condensation. So they actually didn't know how much. So at this point, the water that they're getting from condensation provides all their needs, and all they do is they put the water through a simple Brita filter, and it's totally drinkable. But they didn't know how much water they were getting until one day, I think it was a winter day, and there had not been rain for 4 months. The water tank overflowed, and they monitored what was going into the tank, and indeed, it was enough to overfill it. So that was pretty extraordinary.
The idea of overfilling it brings me to a question of practicality. And in your experience, is there enough of this water that is held in the soil, cycled through plants, captured as dew, to replenish our water sources that are in demand?
Yeah, I do think so, because that has been the experience of people that I visited. I think that we, just as we depend on our built water infrastructure in our urban landscapes, we don't have a sense of just how much water is being wasted all the time. So I spoke to a fellow from Los Angeles, Andrew Kipnis, who he runs an organization called Tree People, and he pointed out that even in the lowest rainfall years, there's thousands of gallons of water per Los Angeles person wasted because it's not being held on the land, it's not being captured. So rainwater harvesting is a very simple way to deal with that. And there's also a fellow named Brad Lancaster, who has created a mini oasis in Tucson, Arizona, growing an extraordinary amount of vegetation from harvesting rainwater. So it isn't, that's why the title fits. It is in plain sight if you know how to look.
And you write in the book a lot about the people who are looking, and you refer to them as water innovators. And I'm curious as to, was there a common thread as to what these people have in common and how they came to look for the water in the first place?
I think what they have in common is a curiosity about the about natural processes, about ecology, and an ability to look toward nature to say, how is it working? How does it work in nature? For example, one of my sources, his name is Jim Laurie. He's a restoration ecologist based in Boston. He often asks the question, when you look at a landscape, what's out there trying to slow the water down? Because when we have our built infrastructure, and that's when water hits either, as I explained, either concrete, asphalt, or dried out soils, there's nothing slowing down the water. So it just rushes away. And if it hits bare soil, you've got soil erosion, all these problems. So you want water to linger. You want water to stay in the system. And as it moves through natural processes, it gets cleansed too. So one thing that in the natural, as our landscapes used to be, animals like beavers would be out there slowing the water down, building dams, building these, which are really water harvesting pools. So lots of different creatures, lots of our biodiversity, plants are slowing the water down, are holding water in the soil. So what they have in common then is looking to nature as a model. And I did find that interesting, how the connection between biodiversity and water, because it certainly makes sense that having a healthy water cycle would support greater biodiversity, but it also turns out that having greater biodiversity actually helps restore the water cycle.
The name of the book is Water in Plain Sight, Hope for a Thirsty World. It is published by St. Martin's Press. Judith Schwartz, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Best of luck with the book.
Well, thank you so much, Jim.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is Water in Plain Sight. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.